morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 17th of January. Yesterday, the president announced proposals to make the country safer, proposals to stem the increase in mass gun violence. He said this is our first task as a society, keeping our children safe. This is how we will be judged. We can't put this off any longer. He presented requiring criminal background checks for all gun sales, reinstating the assault weapons ban, restoring a 10-round limit on ammunition magazines, eliminating armor-piercing bullets, providing mental health services in schools, giving more funds to hire more police officers, and also instituting a federal gun trafficking statute. Because many of those recommendations will require congressional approval, he also gave a 23 executive action list that will be taken immediately. And we will talk about those actions this hour of the program and the president's announcement yesterday, how it was delivered, who was in the audience, and how it is being received. How do you receive the proposals? Is the question of the hour. We'll have two guests with us. Reed Epstein, White House Corps, a reporter for Politico, who was at the event yesterday, and will later in the hour be speaking with a professor at Oklahoma City University School of Law, co-author of Firearms Law and the Second Amendment, Regulation, Rights, and Policy. Welcoming phone calls the entire hour. Here's how you reach us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Reed. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Good to talk to you.
You were in the room yesterday, weren't you?
I was in the very back of the room where, it was a pretty packed audience. Many more members of Congress than are typical for an Obama event, along with various gun control advocates and families of people killed in some of the recent shooting events in Connecticut and Colorado.
And what about those four children who were on stage with the president? Who were they, Reed?
They were children who had written to the White House after the Newtown, Connecticut shootings, urging the president to do something about guns in ways that, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old children do. The White House chose those four. In typical White House fashion, it was a nice mix of ethnicities from the children who were there. They were there to serve as the backdrop to the president signing the 23 executive actions that he initiated yesterday to begin the federal response to prevent gun violence.
Some would say that it's not right to use children in such a circumstance, and yet, because he was talking about Newtown as being the most horrible day of his presidency, children are front and center on many of our minds when we think of gun violence these days.
Yeah, I mean, he took some flack from the NRA for sure, and from folks on the right here in Washington for using children essentially as props in his event yesterday. But the White House response was that children are involved in this from the beginning because they were the victims of the Connecticut shooting, and he's certainly not the only one to be doing that. The NRA, you may have seen yesterday morning, released a video ad attacking the president for having armed security for his children and at their school, while suggesting that other schools should go without armed guards.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised, Reed, that this was all put together in a relatively short period of time? It was just a little over a month.
Yeah, it was 33 days, I believe was the number from the time of the shootings at Newtown to the event yesterday. The vice president held a series of meetings with various stakeholders, gun rights advocates, along with gun control advocates, police, education, mental health experts, et cetera, et cetera. But if you look at what's actually proposed, it's not necessarily so unusual to have the list of proposals. Both legislative and executive that were rolled out yesterday. There are things that gun control advocates have been asking for a long time, but there hasn't necessarily been an appetite in Washington and Congress to go after many of them.
How sweeping are these proposals? How historic?
Well, the legislative proposals, if they, you know, if the president could snap his fingers and have them be law, would indeed be sweeping and historic. An assault weapons ban, a permanent prohibition on high capacity ammunition magazines, and a requirement that every gun purchase go through a background check would be a significant change and a significant step forward for the gun control advocates and gun control community. The reality is those things aren't going to happen right away, if at all. The executive orders that the president put forward will make some difference, but it was a telling sign that even the gun rights advocates weren't terribly bent out of shape about them, which, you know, you can take from that what you will about how effective they'll be.
And you say if they happen, if at all they happen, you expect a huge congressional fight over this?
If there's even a fight at all, if you looked at what Democratic members of the Senate had to say about this yesterday, both in their statements and when they were in front of cameras, what you heard them talking about was the universal background check idea that the president put forward. You didn't hear any discussion about an assault weapons ban except for just a couple of members of Congress who have been talking about specifically that for years and years. There's really no expectation that there will even be a vote in the Senate on an assault weapons ban. There just isn't support for it from Democrats, from conservative and moderate states. And Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, knows that it essentially would be dead on arrival in the House, which is controlled by Republicans. And there's not much political advantage in forcing his members into a vote that for something that is in all likelihood not going to become law under the current House.
Mm-hmm. And yet we seem to, tell me the extent of this, we're hearing that the gun safety, the gun control groups in this country have been receiving many more donations, that there is much more support in the country for significant legislation. Is it just not enough support?
Well, the fact of the matter is that you have a lot of members of Congress who are elected on pro-gun platforms, and with the support of the NRA or the tacit acknowledgement that the NRA wasn't, you know, up against them in a significant way. And it's hard for Democrats to get elected from places like Missouri, North Dakota, Arkansas, and West Virginia, among other states, and those are places where the Democrats would need votes from those senators to get to 50 votes, let alone 60, to overcome a filibuster threat. And it's just hard to see how the math would work out to pass an assault weapons ban or a high capacity ammunition ban, things that that are restricting specific types of weapons from being purchased. And that's really the bread and butter for the NRA, which is supported, as you know, by the gun manufacturers as much as it is by its members. And the gun manufacturers stand to lose a lot of money if any specific types of guns are suddenly prohibited from being sold in this country.
Mm-hmm. And yet, let's go back to the people in this country. I was struck. It's so hard to not cry when you see parents, as the TV was showing yesterday, who have lost children at Newtown specifically, and one of them gave a picture that their daughter had drawn to the president, who keeps that picture in his private study and looks at it every day. And somehow those stories are still with us, very much with us, and people just can't begin to think about another horrendous tragedy like that.
Yeah, it's a very sad scene. Both yesterday, there were many, many wet eyes in the room yesterday. I was in the high school in Connecticut when the president went to give his speech there.
Were
as well.
You?
Again, was a very emotional scene, where the sobs from the crowd often overtook or were often louder than the president's voice at different times during the speech. But the political reality in Washington is different from what the polls show the country is at. And that's part of the challenge for the president and his allies on this issue, is to move members of Congress who have historically been hostile to their position to vote for this. And there just isn't, you know, there isn't a whole lot of evidence at this point that that's happening. There wasn't a single Republican in the room yesterday. It's not
really
clear that any Republicans were even invited to be in the room yesterday. And so you don't know, and I guess until you see a Republican, let alone enough to tip a vote in either the House or the Senate, come to a point where they're agreeing to even have a discussion about this sort of thing, let alone be in favor of it, I think it's certainly in the right spot to be skeptical that much of this sweeping legislation is going to come to pass.
Mm. In terms of the universal background check, which the NRA, according to their spokesperson, seems to believe that there should be much tighter background checks, would that have to pass Congress, or is that one of the executive orders?
No, that would have to pass Congress as well. And the real sort of headline big-ticket items out of this would all have to pass Congress. Assault weapons ban, the high-capacity magazine, limiting the size of ammunition magazines to 10 rounds, universal background checks for all gun sales, and stricter enforcement of gun trafficking, stricter penalties for gun trafficking, all would require congressional approval and all would need to pass the Republican-controlled House as well as the Democratic-controlled Senate. And so those are all issues where the president has to make some inroads at Congress. And I think you're going to see him try to launch his campaign apparatus. The vice president mentioned that when he met with some members of Congress on Monday, that the president has his campaign apparatus still at his disposal to use in this. And there were some emails that went out last night from the White House and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee about it. I think you're going to see, if you were on the Obama's email list during the campaign, you know, if you remember when he was sending 5 and 6 emails a day asking for money, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing emails about gun control from the Obama campaign trying to organize people, especially in who live in districts or states represented by Republicans, to call and pressure them to get them on board with this.
And in terms of the legislation, do you imagine this will be done in one bill, or will all of these ideas be presented separately?
Well, Harry Reid has indicated that he thinks that he will try to bring them piecemeal and not all in one omnibus bill. It's certainly easier to get what their highest priority, which is the background check, a universal background check system passed, if it's on its own, as opposed to if it's wrapped up in with an assault weapons ban or some of this other legislation. And so I think that's probably what you're going to wind up seeing is a big push for that, and then the rest of it either it withers on the vine and sort of slowly dies away, or perhaps the president uses it as a wedge in the 2014 midterm elections to try to run against, to have Democratic candidates run against House Republicans in order to eke out a majority in the House for the last 2 years of his term.
And Reid, what is the NRA's strategy to counter this legislation?
You know, it's the similar strategies they've used before. They don't compromise. They don't back down. They're against anything that reeks of gun control. But we have seen a bit of a difference just in the last few days in their approach. Wayne LaPierre, who, if you remember, gave the fiery, defiant speech in Washington after Newtown, where he said called for guns in every school, and said the only response to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, has really been relegated to out of their real public view. He's now he's still on email solicitations to NRA members and on some video ads that are blasted out to supporters, but they've sent out other surrogates to do national television interviews. They had the NRA president, not LaPierre, was on the Today Show this morning pressing their case. They had other people who were out yesterday doing television shows, and so and the statement the NRA put out after Obama's event was far more subdued than it was after they met with the vice president last week.
Let's go to phone calls. The question, of course, to the audience is, what do you think of what the president had to say yesterday, the pieces of change that will have to be congressionally voted on, and also the executive orders that he released, 23 of them yesterday. What did you think of the whole event? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And guest, the first half hour, is Reed Epstein. He is White House reporter for Politico. Used to work some time ago at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls, starting with Dan in Phelps. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. First off, I'm a life member of the NRA and a hunter and a gun owner and a father and a grandfather. And all of us who hunt know that, for example, we have imposed upon ourselves at our own insistence a legal regulation that limits the capacity of firearms used to hunt waterfowl to 3 shells. I would like to know how the NRA justifies taking a position that our children don't deserve at least the same amount of protection as ducks and geese, and why they would allow guns that hold more than 3 shells in the hands of public citizens. And I'll listen off the air.
Dan, before you go, though, you are a member of the NRA.
Yes, ma'am.
If you have that concern, to whom do you make your concerns known?
I've made my concern known to Mr. LaPierre, who I consider to be a fool, especially after he voted himself a $1 million annual salary.
Well, I didn't know he made that much money. Reed.
Well, I would say, I would tell the caller that, you know, he is paying dues to the NRA and is, you know, is with his financial contribution supporting this organization. And if he disagrees with their public stance, his, you know, his way of responding is to stop paying dues. The fact of the matter is the NRA, you know, the NRA has, you know, more than 4 million members, but, you know, it answers not necessarily to the members, but to the gun manufacturers who provide it with a far more significant amount of its revenue than its members, and the gun manufacturers are the ones who stand to lose if specific types of guns or ammunition magazines are banned, because then that would be a lost source of revenue for them. And so, while the NRA claims it has these millions and millions of members, that's not necessarily who it's beholden to. It's much more responsive to the manufacturers than it is to its members. And second, we haven't seen any sort of movement among the members to take back control of the organization or to change the tone or tenor of the NRA's public statements.
Thanks, Dan, for the call. Rich in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. I own and have for 4 or 5 years, but I think the solution to this problem is I should be required, in order to own, to belong to a militia. And I think everybody who owns a firearm in the United States should be required to train and function in a well-regulated militia. This gets past the questions of licensing, registration, inspection, education, and it picks up on a historically creative, if I may say so, on the proviso at the beginning of the amendment that says a well-regulated militia being necessary to a secure state. It also capitalizes on the NRA members' fears that people want to take away guns. I don't have any objection to the idea of people owning guns. People should know I have a gun. I should know who else has a gun. We should be working together, particularly if we're going to be talking about protecting our schools and not going broke from hiring armed guards and additional policemen with our tax dollars, to be part of a well-regulated militia. If the presidents in the past could call in the gold earlier, I would think that congressionally and through the executive office, we could declare you can have a gun, you can have as many guns as you want, but you cannot simply own. You have to be part of a militia, training with other people, working with other people to make sure that the state, that is, the people, are secure because of your ownership.
Reed.
Well, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to bear arms and own a gun, and not necessarily just a militia, even though those are the words that the Second Amendment uses. The court has found otherwise, and even the president himself yesterday said that he agrees with that interpretation, that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to bear arms. Another thing, I just mentioned before the break that you should expect to see emails come in from the Obama campaign on gun control, and just a couple minutes ago, one did, where with Jim Messina from the campaign, who was the campaign manager, sent an email with the subject line, "Stand with the President to Reduce Gun Violence." So that's beginning as we speak right now.
You know, the president did make some interesting points, though, after he said that Second Amendment gives an individual a right to own guns. He also said, "We have the right to worship freely and safely. That right was denied to the Sikhs in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. The right to assembly peaceably assemble. That right was denied shoppers in Oregon and moviegoers in Aurora, Colorado. And the most fundamental set of rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness denied to college students at Virginia Tech, high school students at Columbine, and elementary school students in Newtown." Is that an effective way to talk about the other rights that we have that are denied to gather support for his legislative proposals and executive orders?
Well, it's borrowing from some of the language that you hear from some of the gun control advocates who talk about the Second Amendment not being more important than the other amendments. And then that was, you know, he didn't put it in such stark terms, but that was sort of where he was going at, where the president was going at with that section of his remarks from yesterday, you know, reminding people that the Second Amendment is not all powerful. It's not more important than the First Amendment or, you know, the rest of people's abilities to live their lives.
Yeah. And finally, I'm just wondering, as a reporter who was at Newtown and who was there yesterday, this is a really big story to be covering, and I'm sure that it just gets you at your core. It's a horrible, horrible event that took place. It really has shaken people all over the country, and to be in that room and hear those sobs and realize the enormity of the tragedy, and then to have politics at play again when people of goodwill are just trying to make us a safer country, really. And there has to be debate about that, but doesn't there have to be serious consideration of what's happened?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's really indicative of sort of how divided the country is, where something like this happens and people have diametrically opposite reactions to it. It's not just necessarily the folks in the NRA. It's people in wide swaths of the country who are Second Amendment absolutists. And while there are a lot of polls showing people have broad, there is broad support of an assault weapons ban or broad support of you know, a universal background check requirement, when it comes to time to vote on these issues, people who are single issue voters on gun control tend to be against it and not for it, and that's just the reality of the country that we're in at the moment. And until that changes, it's hard to foresee a whole lot of progress for people who want to make people like Mike Bloomberg, the mayor, New York mayor, who's trying to enact new gun control measures.
Yeah, do you have time for one more phone call?
Sure.
Okay, let's go to Tom in Columbus. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I was happy to hear the gentleman who is a life member kind of voice some disgust with the way the NRA has been handling not just this issue, but the last 4 years that we, you know, and I'm a member myself, and I'm thoroughly disgusted with their political tactics. I get the slippery slope argument, but it's and the caller prior to me suggesting that I need to become, my wife and I, who are avid hunters and sports shooters, need to become members of militia. It's craziness, but a lot of us are very put off by the way that the heads of the organization are handling this situation. This is a multifaceted problem. there's multifaceted causes, and the guns are part of it. To deny that is just ludicrous. But I think the media plays into it. I think parenting, we all know the issues. We need to get to some solutions, but I wish there was a group of NRA members that had time to, and I apologize for being out of breath, I was just running.
That's all right.
that would take the time to organize so current members, because exactly what your guest said is what my plan is. I will not be rejoining the NRA, at least in the foreseeable future. I was a junior Olympic shooter. I've dined with a lot of the hierarchy, you know, of the NRA in years past, and it's disgusting. It's completely disgusting. So I'll take some remarks off the air. So
all right, thank you. Has anybody done a study of how many NRA members feel as he does?
Well, the polling, there's been a lot of polling that's been cited by the president and gun control allies that as many as up to three-quarters of NRA members support background checks and a majority support assault weapons ban. Now, are those folks organized enough to like the caller said, make their views well known within the NRA? There hasn't been a whole lot of evidence of that I've seen. But you know, the NRA until the 70s was sort of a hobbyist organization before it was taken over by folks who wanted a harder line on legislation, and since then it's become a much more political organization, fighting for gun rights. And you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that could happen again in the opposite direction, but there hasn't been any evidence to this point that's taking place.
Reed, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Reed Epstein, White House reporter for Politico, spent some years working for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as well. Michael O'Shea is joining us now as we look at the Second Amendment and as we look at what the proposals are from the task force that will have to have congressional approval. Michael O'Shea is professor at the Oklahoma City University School of Law and co-author of Firearms Law and the Second Amendment, Regulation, Rights, and Policy. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Michael O'Shea, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure to be here.
When you heard the president outline the ideas that will have to be passed by Congress, what was your immediate thought, that he was going to have one heck of a rough time getting any of those passed, or did you have an opposite thought?
It's interesting. The president's presentation, as Reed mentioned, was divided into executive orders and actions, most of which appeared to be pretty conventional administrative measures on stuff that's internal to the executive branch of the government. And then there were some more sweeping proposals that the president recognized can only be passed by Congress. I was interested in the fact that some of the more aggressive potential executive orders that people had been suspecting might be announced were not, and most of the really ambitious measures, the president recognized that this is in Congress's responsibilities.
Let's break them down. Requiring criminal background checks for all gun sales, indications that the leadership of the NRA and certainly membership of the NRA would say that's okay.
That one is interesting. The current law is firearm sales from federally licensed firearm dealers require an instant background check. The private sales between citizens of the same state in most states do not, and that's what critics of current law like the president are focusing on. There seems to be a fair amount of political support for that, and the concern about it is very straightforward and goes to, you know, it's sort of, we immediately have to jump to pretty fundamental issues. Some people think that you can't have an effective system of background checks for all purchases without making it possible for the federal government to have, in effect, central registration of all gun ownership in America. And some people are worried that registration schemes tend to lead to confiscation. They make it much easier for a future government to confiscate lawfully owned guns. So if, to the extent that there's serious opposition to that proposal, I think that's what it's grounded in.
Well, that's kind of interesting. A future government. So people are worried about something that may happen.
Yes, just like First Amendment rights and other rights, people take these seriously, not just as a matter of immediate political give and take, but think that this is something fundamental about America. And one of the lessons of history is that governments can change in their character. And a lot of people who are strong supporters of Second Amendment rights, you know, take the long view, take the historical view, and they're worried about a future America where the rule of law is respected to a lot lesser extent than it is now. And that informs their thinking about what measures it's appropriate to enact here and now.
Mm-hmm. Another piece of legislation would be reinstating the assault weapons ban. How were we able to pass that? Why did we lift that ban? And why is that so hard to get through now after Columbine, after Newtown, after Aurora?
From 1994 to 2004, federal law contained a ban on a variety of common styles of semi-automatic rifles and pistols. These were guns that aren't machine guns, but fire one shot per round, and then you have to pull the trigger again and have a magazine that loads the next round into the chamber. That's how a semi-automatic gun works. There were some specific models that were prohibited for sale to American citizens from 1994 to 2004. There were some studies of the ban's effectiveness during its time, and they didn't find that it had had a significant effect on violent gun crime. Violent gun crime was declining generally during that period, and it continued to decline after the federal gun ban expired in 2004. And actually, the firearms homicide rate now is lower than it's ever been since the early 90s. It's about half now what it was in the early 1990s. So the gun ban expired by its own terms in 2004. It had a 10-year sunset clause, and Congress didn't renew it at the time. There have been attempts to renew it since then. They're controversial because the guns that it would regulate are widely owned. There are probably millions of the kinds of rifles that such a ban would prohibit in private hands. And there are tens of millions of magazines in private hands that would fall under a renewed ban. And mm-hmm. I think that, again, is part of the reason that there's a lot of opposition to this, that and there doesn't seem to be a strong empirical case that it actually moves the gun violence rate.
What do you think, from studying this and writing about this, would move the gun violence rate?
Well, that's a separate issue from the question of what the law is right now, of what the Second Amendment prohibits. We know that sociological factors seem to play a big role. One thing that, again, the striking thing that we find is gun ownership has never been higher in the country. It's gone up dramatically over the past 20 years, and meanwhile, the gun violence rate has fallen in about half. And there are a lot of different competing explanations about this. You know, one is that some of the drug epidemics that led to so much violence in the cities in the early 1990s have been reduced to some extent, perhaps through incarceration, perhaps through changes in policing measures. Some people argue that, you know, there are certain types of violent crimes that there is strong evidence that private gun ownership reduces, such as home invasion burglaries. America has a much lower rate of home invasion burglaries, the most sort of disruptive and violent and terrifying form of burglary where burglars break into an occupied dwelling. And our rate of that is much lower than in other countries, and a lot of people speculate that that's because Americans are known to have guns at home and burglars don't want to break into occupied homes. So in some cases, private gun ownership seems to have a role in decreasing certain kinds of violent crime. And then there are a lot of sociological factors that there is active debate about what reduces, what produces increases and decreases in violent crime.
So looking at what Congress may, the makeup of Congress right now and what they may be willing to pass, do you see any of these measures that they may be willing to pass?
It's, again, that's not a legal question so much as a political question, which your
right.
first guest was addressing. You know, I heard most of Mr. Epstein's discussion, and it seemed pretty well informed to me, so I'll defer to him on that matter.
Okay. Let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Professor Michael O'Shea, professor at the Oklahoma City University School of Law, co-author, Firearms Law and the Second Amendment, Regulation, Rights, and Policy. Jessica in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, I hope this question works for the, this guest. It was a little more geared towards the first guest. But I'm kind of curious why people seem to be separating so many of the issues facing our country and wanting to look at gun violence as separate from some of the healthcare or economic issues we're having, and I think they're really connected. If you want, we're talking about having stricter background checks, but why aren't we talking about having better mental health care availability, and that's how we help identify people that shouldn't have guns. I also think in general, when the economy's better, crime goes down, which would have an impact on these gun deaths. So really these issues are connected, and why do you think both the American people and the government is kind of bad at connecting those issues and really seeing that if we work on any one part of them, we can have an impact on the other issues?
It's an interesting question. I would say, actually, the president clearly agrees with your perspective, and I think a lot of the members of Congress on both sides of the aisle do as well, because there has been a good deal of discussion of the mental health system, in particular, in the wake of the Sandy Hook atrocity. So there are many, many of the agenda items in the president's executive orders and actions that were released yesterday that have to do with that. One risk is, it's just like anything else. It's complicated to come up with policies that will help people in need get mental health, but won't also create possibilities for abuse. And a lot of people are worried about provisions like the one recently rammed through the legislature in the middle of the night in New York State, that imposes strong reporting requirements on mental health professionals. If they think one of their patients poses a threat, they have to report it, and then the government can pretty summarily revoke the individual's right to own firearms. There are obvious advantages to that. On the flip side, there are already mental health professionals who are expressing concern that patients just aren't going to talk to them. They won't seek treatment, and they won't be candid with their health provider because they're concerned about having a civil liberty deprived. So it's complicated, but I think these issues are not being separated right now. The president and Congress are linking them, or at least talking about them together, to a great degree.
Thanks, Jessica. Sam in Madison. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Professor O'Shea. I have two comments, Kathleen. One of them I did not run by your screener, but hopefully you let me pass it on. If you compare the U.S. with other nations, which includes developed nations, second, third, fourth world nations, you will agree, hopefully, that these incidents of mass shootings are unique to this nation. It doesn't happen a lot anywhere else. It could mean two things. Either all these other nations have a much better healthcare system than the U.S., and they take extremely good care of their mentally ill people and effectively eliminate any violence that may occur because of them, or it could be the logical conclusion, which is no access to guns. So it continues to baffle me why this country thinks it's a mental illness problem. It may be somewhat related to mental illness, but the bigger issue here is gun access. Second point, Kathleen, if I may, is that this country is run based on two books. One of them was written 2,000 years ago, the Bible, and the other was written over 200 years ago. Why are we continuing to live our lives and define our policies based on books that were written such a long time ago? It's time to change these narratives that we are getting from these books. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Sam. Professor O'Shea.
There have been mass shootings in European countries and in recent years. There was one in Germany not long ago. There was, of course, the horrific shooting on the island in Norway, which tragically had an even higher death toll than the Sandy Hook shooting. And then there have even been in Great Britain, which has some of the most draconian gun laws in the industrialized world and also has about four times the violent crime rate of the United States now. There have been rampages with shooters who went on a murder spree with their double barrel, archaic shotgun. So there have been some of these in other European countries. And as I said, I do think the connection with mental health is legitimate and important. There was a mention about the a document adopted over 200 years ago, and that's the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights that was adopted in 1791. There was one aspect of the discussion in the first half hour that I really thought needed to be broadened a little bit. Kathleen got a call from an NRA member who was professed to be baffled about why anybody would need a gun with more than three shells in it. I thought that was a surprising comment because it seems so out of the main line of what Americans talk about when you ask them, why do you choose to own firearms? And one of the big interests is self-defense. And the core of the Supreme Court's holding in the D.C. v. Heller case in 2008 is that the central legitimate purpose of the Second Amendment right is to enable individual self-defense. So we can talk about, and there is scope for talking about, gun regulations that would be both constitutional and a good idea, but the discussion should take place within the context of actually acknowledging what the right protects and what it's about. And I will say I have seen the president and his administration seem to be making some progress in this. On the campaign trail, it was extremely difficult to find any mention in his discussion of the Second Amendment of this elementary human rights interest, self-defense, which, as I said, is what the Supreme Court said is at the core of the amendment. You'd get references to hunters and sportsmen. And while that's important and valued, there's an element of it that seems to be dodging the issue, and it tends to turn off people who are interested in gun rights because they feel that the current gun control controversies aren't about hunting rights or traditional hunting firearms. They're about firearms that are often owned for self-defense purposes. So that's the ground that the debate should be taking place on.
Okay, that's fine. I wonder where we have that debate. Why can't we, and who needs to have a discussion of how many rounds do you need for self-defense? What kind of weapon do you need for self-defense? Do you need armor-piercing bullets? There are all kinds of weapons. Some of them kill huge numbers of people in a very short period of time. How do we relate the ability to buy those kinds of weapons to what the Second Amendment says? Who decides that? We need to decide that as a society, don't we?
There's some guidance in the Supreme Court's opinion so far, and the court's likely to clarify that in future cases. And in a way, as I read it, the answer the court is moving towards also incorporates a view of what the people think, because the Heller case held, one of the things that it held was that a ban on handguns is unconstitutional. And the reason was that Heller concluded that the right is to keep and bear arms for the purpose of self-defense, and the handgun is the quintessential self-defense handgun that's widely owned for that purpose. And it uses an idea of firearms in common use. And we look at what firearms people actually choose to own for legitimate purposes, such as self-defense, presumably also target shooting, hunting, And that defines the scope of the right. And if a prohibition seeks to ban too large or too important a category of firearms that are commonly owned by law-abiding citizens, then we start to suspect that it's unconstitutional. And that's what the court concluded was the case with handguns. So I think that's where to start. What are people actually buying and owning in millions or tens of millions for these legitimate purposes?
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this half hour is Professor Michael O'Shea. He's author of Firearms Law and the Second Amendment, Regulation, Rights, and Policy, professor at the Oklahoma City University School of Law. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, Barbara Miner will be joining us. She is author of Lessons from the Heartland, A Turbulent Half Century of Public Education in an Iconic American City. That city happens to be Milwaukee. Barbara joins us after the news. Taylor in Rushford, Minnesota is next. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, thanks for the show. I agree with your first caller who spoke about the mental illness and the drugs that the people who have committed these mass shootings over the last 20 years have been on. And it seems like that's the underlying problem, and it's the big elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. Maybe we should be looking at, you know, the drugs that these people are getting and, you know, the side effects of these drugs. I know sane people who own assault rifles and their mental health is fine. They use them for target practice. They use them just for sport shooting, competition shooting. No sane people that I know of are taking their assault rifles and going and shooting up schools. So I think we need to look at the underlying problem instead of taking these rights and gun rights away from, you know, the sane people. I think we need to look at the underlying problem, which is the mental health and the drugs.
Professor O'Shea.
I agree that that's an avenue that deserves to be explored. And there have been people who have speculated about a connection, just like what the caller describes. Whether that exists is a factual and a medical question. So I'm not going to opine on it because I think it's the sort of thing that we need to have it studied by experts and see what they conclude. And I will say about that, that seems to me to be one important aspect of the post-Newtown debate that's worth keeping in mind. Without getting into the question that Kathleen discussed with Mr. Epstein about whether it was appropriate or a good idea for the president to feature children in his press conference, one thing I think we could all agree on is that at the end of the day, it's adults who need to decide what to do about this, and that it is a profoundly sober adult task. And it matters what the facts are, and it matters what the, you know, what actually causes the problem of gun violence in this country. And one thing that has to be said is we have very good figures kept by the FBI and other agencies, and homicides with rifles, that's all rifles, of which the ones regulated by an assault weapons ban, the so-called assault weapons ban, would just be a subset, are a pretty small minority of firearms homicides. Firearms homicides are committed overwhelmingly with handguns, and that's actually what the vast majority of violent gun deaths are caused by. And I think that's an example of it matters what the facts are and what fact-finding is. And in fact, the professor of political science from the University of Chicago, who was on this program a couple of days ago, was expressing satisfaction that it looked like the administration was going to try and act really fast and enact some kind of new regulatory changes of gun laws in the aftermath of the Newtown shooting. That seems to me that's a very imprudent perspective. Something as serious as this, I would think we would want to take our time, consider it soberly and dispassionately. A lot of people think that when we had a tremendous surge of emotion in the aftermath of an even more horrific event, the 9/11 terrorist attacks. A lot of legislation was rushed in that greatly heightened the federal government's surveillance powers, and a lot of people a decade plus later think was profoundly unwise.
Thank you very much, Professor O'Shea. We need to end at this point. We're out of time. Professor Michael O'Shea, professor at the Oklahoma City University School of Law, co-author of Firearms Law and the Second Amendment, Regulation, Rights, and Policy. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who produces this program.